Whether you're walking barefoot in the snow, escaping for a walk on your lunch break, or trekking halfway across the world for a lush view, it feels good when we unplug and connect to our simpler side. If only our everyday nutrition were that simple. It's time to simplify your wellness routine with Ka'Chava. Getting the nutrition we need from that graveyard of supplements in our cupboards is often overcomplicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, keep it simple with just 2 scoops that have the highest quality ingredients. Simplify your nutrition at ka'chava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st. That's ka'chava, ka'chava.com, code FITNESS.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Let's Chat Reality. I'm Michael.
And I'm Molly.
And we are here today to start a new season of The Traitors. Episodes 1 through 3 of season 4 just dropped a few days ago, and a lot happened. So we have a lot to get to with all 3 of these episodes. Molly, are you ready to get started?
Yes, let's do it. I can't believe that we're already past January 8th now. We've been thinking about that date so long of Traitors premiering, so I'm so excited to dive into it.
Yeah, it's one of those shows that the cast drops, they officially announce it when they start filming, which is pretty rare. But because of that, it feels like we've been waiting with bated breath every day since then, which was back in June. So it's been a good 7 months since then, and it's been a long wait, but it was, I would say, you know, no spoilers, a little sad, but overall, I think well worth the wait.
I agree. So let's do it. Let's talk about it now.
All right. So we did a deep dive in the cast last episode. So if you haven't listened to that yet, go and listen to that first, because we're not going to do a whole cast breakdown again here today. But we will start right then with episode 1. So the cast pulls up in front of the castle. They drive up, which was at night this year, which I thought was very cool. That was a little bit of a change, and it allowed for kind of a different vibe, a different feel to it. I liked that change that they did this year.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was cool. And I like the fire effects, and that's fun to see. But it did feel different that they came in at night.
Yeah, it felt, you know, big budget. The show is very successful, so you can tell the difference between this and like season 1, season 2, where they didn't make it as much of a spectacle as they do. I feel like last season, I can't remember if it was at night last season, but I do feel like they did something a little bit like kind of extra similarly to this. Yeah. So I enjoy that they make it a whole thing now.
Agreed. Yeah, it just feels more like this is the start and like opening ceremony-esque, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. It does feel like that. No, I love that feel to it. And we have 2 Olympians here, so they are experienced with that.
Exactly.
Well, Alan greets everybody. They all kind of mingle before that. We get to see some of the people who know each other, get to a little moment where they introduce like Tara and Johnny have a relationship, Dorinda and Rinna, and so we get to Rob and Tiffany. We get to see a little bit of those interactions, which is fun. And then Alan comes in and greets them and lets them know that this is going to work a little differently this year, that he is going to select 1 traitor right now. Now, he lets us know that this is going to be a secret traitor. He doesn't tell the cast that. So they think it's just a normal traitor that he is picking early. What do you think of that?
I thought it was a good twist. I like this aspect, or just like in general, of the secret traitor, but then also for the cast to not know that it was like a different kind of traitor, I guess, was an interesting part of it too. I don't know if that had so much of a say, like versus knowing what secret traitor is versus the not secret traitor for the rest of the faithfuls there, but for the traitors who they picked, like that obviously was an impact of seeing like, oh, this is interesting that now we have this twist added on.
Yeah, so the secret traitor, just for those who don't know, was something that they did on Traitors UK this year as well. Now, Traitors UK airs simultaneously with the US. So Traitors UK started January 1st, this started January 8th. They do three episodes at a time, so they're well ahead of where the US season is right now. And they film back to back. So there's a lot of similarities always between those seasons. And I didn't necessarily know that the secret traitor was going to be something that they also did on US this year. So it was a huge surprise that because I kind of thought like, oh, usually the challenges are very similar. You kind of know like there's twists, but they do them differently. But this they actually did almost exactly the same way. The only difference was that the secret traitor here did not know the identities of the other traitors, whereas on UK they did. So the secret traitor had all the information. They were the only one to have all the information, whereas here it was a little more even in the information that they had, which I liked better. I think it made the secret traitor a little bit less OP. But I think it works as a concept better than it's worked in execution on either show. We can get into more of what happened with everything with the secret traitor. Obviously, we'll get into that. But I think that it's a fun idea because for those like we watched, I know you watched season two of The Mole on Netflix. We covered that a couple of years ago. And I think that a lot of people were hoping that traitors would kind of try something in that regard of having a secret mole, a secret traitor who we don't know who it is, they don't know who it is. And I really like the idea of it. I think there probably needs to be some tweaks to it, but we'll get into the details of that a little bit more later.
Yeah, agreed. I liked The Mole a lot. It made you also as the audience member, like watching the show, like try to think of who could this person be, because obviously we didn't know who the secret traitor was until then later on found out. But like in general, just going through it, it keeps you on your toes of trying to guess like what's going to happen next or who's going to be revealed, whoever it is. And it just makes it exciting to watch it.
Yeah, it's a fun guessing game because I think as an audience, a lot of times we're like, oh, how stupid are they that they can't figure this out? But then when it's not revealed to us either, it kind of shows how hard it is. And obviously, I think the problem with it, I mean, I guess I'll get into a little bit of it now while we're talking about it. But I think part of the problem is that we are so heavily reliant on the edit that it's like they're not going to make it too obvious, but it's also not going to be someone from like out of nowhere either. So I feel like usually we can kind of tell where the show is trying to lead us into the direction of who they want us to think it is and who it is. So I feel like it's a lot, not easier, but it makes more sense for them to be trying to figure out who it is. Like, I like that the traitors also have a guessing game of trying to figure out who the secret traitor is. I think that's very fun. Yeah. I think that maybe in the future, if they were to do it, maybe keep it a secret from us for like one episode and then reveal it to us before they reveal it to them, because then the traitors still get the fun guessing game aspect of it, but then they can like give us a full picture of what's happening. I think part of the problem here is that like, okay, we know who's on the short list, but it's like, we don't know the reason why. And so people are getting murdered and we know why the traitors chose it out of those few people, but we don't really know why they're on there in the first place. And that was, I think, my only problem with it.
Yeah, it did feel like, okay, like who could be choosing these people and why? Like we missed out on that by not knowing who the secret traitor was. Maybe they had some confessionals they weren't showing us also, that because like, they could have like maybe changed the sound of their voice or like explained to us, I guess, if they were still keeping it a secret, if we wanted to get more insight into that. But it just felt like they didn't show it in general. So it was more just a mystery in general, but overall of figuring out like who could this person be and why are they choosing them?
I think that's a really good compromise, actually. I do like that idea of having like a voice changer, maybe a confessional from the back rather than the front, and like wearing the hood. I think that would be actually very, very fun. And that way, I agree, we get the reasoning behind it. And so we get the same amount of information. And that could also really help us with clues that aren't reliant on the edit. And also still having that guessing game. So I think actually that's a really good compromise. And if they do it in the future, I hope they do it that way.
Yeah. So Peacock, if you're listening, there's a tip.
Yes. Well, then after, so we get this kind of one by one, everybody goes up in front of Alan and he reveals to them a card. One of them says a traitor card, the others are blank. And we get some fun moments here where as people are walking up, the others are kind of whispering about them and like asking like, oh, is he from Survivor? Is he like, and so people are kind of introducing how we're getting the first sense of like how the cast feels about each other just based on like, no, having not met them yet, but like who they think is a threat. And I think that's very fun.
Yeah, I liked that. You could see them talking about like, oh, this guy's smart or like whatever, like trying to show what they already know about each other. I mean, obviously, like they haven't really met each other yet. They just are going off of their preconceived notions of the shows that they were on and all of that. So it was interesting to see that, though, and the little side combos.
Mm-hmm. And Rob Cesternino gives us a very fun quote where Alan says, are you ready to play? And he says, so effing hard. And that is a video and GIF that I now have saved on my phone for many future references.
I know, that was a great clip. I'm glad you saved it too.
Yes. Well, then everyone walks into the castle and starts mingling before they head to their first round table where the rest of the traitors are chosen. Alan selects Candace Dillard-Bassett, Lisa Rinna, and Rob Rausch as our first three starting traitors. What did you think of these selections?
So initially, I was shocked that there were two housewives part of the traitors group. I feel like we've seen one be part of the group, but not two at the time. And so that was interesting. And seeing that there were no CBS people in there was another shock. But I think Rob actually makes a lot of sense for why they chose him, because I think that, I mean, obviously he has a big Love Island fan base there, but also just his personality kind of suits well for a traitor, because he's just like, I don't know. So far, so like he's given me like good traitor vibes. You know, like he's not too loud, but like he also understands like the sense of what people are thinking and could maybe sway them. But for Candace, I think she's very fun to see so far as a traitor. I mean, maybe some slip ups here and there, which makes it interesting too. And Lisa, obviously, I feel like she's just a great big personality, so it's fun to see them. Like, now that I have seen them as like an action a little bit more, like as traitors, it makes sense, but like in the initial picking of them, I was shocked.
Yeah, I think that this is a response to last season in a lot of ways, where it was a very gamer heavy traitor selection. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, because of that, the housewives were targeted immediately. They were slaughtered except for Dolores. Yeah. And so I think that the housewives fans really were upset by that, of course. And really, I think the last two seasons, housewives haven't really fared super well. But then, so this season, they needed to change that meta. They needed to not, I thought, and we talked about this last week, that I thought they were going to choose one gamer and it would be two either housewives or maybe one housewife. But I knew that it was going to be one housewife. At the very least, we were going to have one housewife in the coven or whatever they call it. But the turret. And they chose two, which I thought was a little bit surprising, but I don't hate it. I don't hate it, because we need to change that meta so that next season there won't be this thought that, like Michael Rapaport said, where he's like, well, there must be one housewife and one gamer and one other person, and that there has to be a representative from all of these groups, because we've never had a season with no gamers in the turret. And I think now they feel probably more comfortable doing that because people have watched the show. There's enough seasons that the housewives and the others have been able to watch where they understand the game now. And it doesn't have to be a gamer in order for it to be somebody who they trust to understand the game here. And so I don't hate the selection at all. I think Candace and Rinna are perfect. They're so entertaining. And I think that Rob is so unsuspecting of somebody who you would think they would choose that I think he's perfect too. So I don't hate these selections. I maybe hate some of the outcomes just personally, but I don't hate these selections for entertainment value.
Yeah, I know. I agree that they had to change that up from last season, especially of seeing that Housewives kept being targeted there. But now on the flip side of it, it seems that all of the gamers are getting targeted. So then what's that balance of how are they going to kind of level set it? Because like if one side is going to flip flop or whatever, it's like, how is that going to appease everyone? It's never going to appease everyone. But like, where is that like happy medium of where it could be?
Right. I mean, that's just kind of the problem, if you can call it that, of the traders format in general, is that whoever you select as the traders, they're in control of a lot of the boot order of the show, those few people. And in a perfect world, yeah, you would have a representative from each of those shows so that one show doesn't get slaughtered like that. But then it's too easy to figure out who it is. If you always have an even selection like that, then you're going to a lot more easily be able to figure out who those traders are. Whereas doing it this way, it is a lot more random and it is a lot more like you can't just kind of game it like that. And I don't know how to fix that. I don't think there is a way to. I think that slaughtering all the gamers, slaughtering all the housewives, probably a little bit too obvious. Like maybe it's not the best way to go about it if you want to stay hidden. So I don't know that they're doing it the smartest, but then again, it seems to be working. So I don't know, but I just wish that they didn't decide to do this exact turret in the season that Rob's sister Nina was on.
Yeah. Agreed. And when I saw that there weren't any CBS people, I was like, this isn't great for our people.
Yeah. But we will get to that. Yeah. Now, back in the castle, everyone starts to speculate on who the traitors might be. As I mentioned, Michael Rappaport says that mathematically, at least one of the gamers and one of the housewives must be a traitor. That comment comes back later, so keep that in the back of your mind. Candace specifically calls out Rinna, which is very interesting because at this point, of course, the traitors do not know each other's identities yet. So her calling out Rinna is very funny because she's right. But Candace is also a traitor, so it's not good that she's right in this situation. I think that she probably thought, I'm the only housewife representative in the turret most likely. So me calling out Rinna is a safe bet that I'm not actually calling out a traitor. Little does she know. And then also Rob C and Tiffany discuss having each other's backs as gamers, which was a conversation that I love to see because they're right. The gamers are outnumbered. They don't know it, but none of them are traitors. So they should definitely be having each other's back here.
Yeah, for sure. I know. I was surprised when Candace mentioned Rinna, and then obviously as a viewer, you knew like, oh no, like that's another fellow traitor, but she didn't know yet. But she did tell Rinna, at least like when they went into the tour the first time, of like being up front, that she would make sure like to clear her name if that were to come up again. But at least like she didn't know, so it wasn't like, sorry, like I didn't mean to do that. But yeah, with Rob C and Tiffany, that was great to see that.
Yes. Well, then the traitors do meet each other for the first time in the turret. And then Alan comes in and reveals to them that there is a secret traitor. He tells them how it's going to work, that the secret traitor will be giving them a short list of who they can pick from to murder each night. And then this will keep going until they are given a chance at some point to unite with the secret traitor and all just be regular traitors together. What do you think of this, the way that they are working the secret traitor here with the shortlist? Do you think this is the best way for them to go about it, or is there something that would be more interesting, more fair?
Yeah, at first I was like, okay, yeah, this makes sense. That they kind of just have to give them a list and they choose from that. I don't know if I have a better suggestion on in terms of like who they could give it. Maybe they're, yeah, I don't really, I think this way, like giving the list, the short list, and then the traders just choosing them makes it fair, because at least it's not just one person and you have to agree to that. Like she gave at least, or the Chica trader gave at least a list of four people in it. But I do wish that, because we saw one of them as who was one of the traders, that like maybe they are able to know, like what you're saying, like they know who the traders are, just so that they're not going to add them into that short list.
Mm-hmm. So I can't take credit for this. I honestly don't remember who said it. I think I'm just going to assume Mike Bloom because he's a genius. But I was listening to some podcast where they gave the suggestion that this should be backwards, that the regular traders meet in the turret, come up with a short list of, say, three people. And then they give that short list to the secret trader. And then the secret trader has to just choose one of those options to murder. And then the traders themselves don't even know going into breakfast who's going to be in breakfast the next morning. I think that would be very interesting too. Like, I don't hate this way. I just think that that would also be something interesting that they could try in the future too.
Yeah, I do like that as well, because then at least what we were mentioning, how we don't get the deliberation of like who they were choosing, then this way we see who the options are, and then whoever the secret trader is, like we kind of have some knowledge into, okay, like that's why like this person might have chosen that person to get rid of. So I do like that way. So credit to whoever that was.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the perk of it too is that it gives our regular traders more power, and then the secret trader is almost like the slightly underpowered trader. And I think that that makes sense, because it makes up for the fact that they are more powered by the fact that their identity is a secret. And so it kind of, I think it gives a little bit of a better balance.
Yeah, I agree. I was wondering about that too, like that power shift of like, okay, like should the one person have more power than the three? Like what's the ranking there?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's downside to being the secret trader too, in that nobody has your back in the same way that the regular traders do. Like they have each other to cover for each other. But also I think the fact that nobody knows your identity also might be helpful, because then everybody's going to treat you like you are a faithful, and there won't be like that suspicious possible interaction that you would have with somebody that somebody could catch, that you have that kind of anonymity that I think maybe helps, so that everybody treats you normally like a regular faithful.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So we'll see. Maybe they do that in the future.
We will see. But then the cast goes to their first mission. We won't get too much into the mission since we have three episodes to cover, but there are 100 coffins floating in the water. 12 of them are worth gold for the prize pot. The players have to find 12, those 12, bring them back to shore to place in a grave. Each grave has a player's name on it. If a coffin is placed in your grave, you are up for murder. Everybody else then receives a shield. So the players who ended up with coffins are up for murder tonight are Ron, Rob R, Donna, Eric, Michael, Ian, Dorinda, Rob C, and Mark. When you saw those selections of people who were up for murder, were you in particular scared for anyone, thinking, yeah, that's probably who's going to be murdered tonight?
Yeah, I was thinking, well, because we obviously knew that there weren't any CBS people in the main traders of it. I guess we could have thought like maybe the secret trader is a CBS person, but I was really worried for Ian and Rob C in this, because of just knowing about like they were not the gamers, you know, like of stereotyping it, and they could target them. But yeah, I was nervous for those two. What about you?
Yeah, I kind of was wondering, like I was nervous for them. But then I also thought someone like Mark is such a, or Eric, like they're so random that I kind of thought maybe they would go in that direction, because they might think that murdering a gamer makes it too obvious that it's probably a more housewife heavy turret or Bravo slash others non-gamer heavy turret. And that maybe murdering somebody like Mark or Eric would kind of just throw the castle into chaos of being like, who would choose them? That's so random. And they're not people that are super protected by anyone or would be targeted by anyone, that it would just kind of be one of those WTF selections that they might gravitate towards.
Yeah, I did think that too. I was nervous for that because I love Mark. So I was like, he can't go yet. But Eric, I didn't feel like as strongly for. Like, I had a feeling that they could have done that. But then, like, it just, at that point, they probably weren't thinking as high in the strategy as they could have. But yeah.
Eric seems so adorable. I really like Eric so far. Him in the cage, that little moment, I was like, oh, poor Eric. So I hope that he stays. He's a cutie. I like him.
Agreed. And we are seeing some of him, so I feel like maybe he stays for a period of time. We'll have to see.
Yeah, there's a few people that have been purpled here. Eric is not one of them, that as much as I was maybe expecting him to be. There's a few people that I can think of offhand that I feel like we've seen less than him.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Well, then in the car on the way back to the castle, we get our first little bit of drama here. So Candace tells Portia and Mora, who are in the car with her, that Michael told their team during the challenge that they should put the coffins in the housewives' graves. So Portia especially is like, what in the world? Michael is supposedly this huge Bravo fan. He loves the housewives. Why would he say that? So then when he gets back to the castle, Portia confronts Michael, who denies saying that and gets pretty angry about it. So they go into the room where Candace and Mora are so that they have everybody there and it can all be hashed out. And Candace just completely denies saying it, which I thought was so funny. I mean, that just being her immediate first thought to do is just deny, deny, deny. And I don't even know why she denied it, though. I don't know that I fully understand that.
Yeah, no, that's why I was saying I think that this was a slip up for her. Because, like, just own it. If you said it, like, maybe you misheard him or something, that you could like get over it that way. But then she's in turn making Portia then second guess her relationship to Candace of saying, thinking like, okay, like why is Candace not lying to me? Like she did say this, but then Mora there just like, I don't remember anything was funny because she's just like, yeah, I have a bad memory, which like on that, like, seeing from the viewership, like, yeah, like we get that, but like maybe in the game people could think that's maybe a game play or something, but or maybe they just think she's not paying attention and they keep her around because then they won't think that she's gonna catch them. But that was interesting. And so then Portia's just kind of on her own there, like, all right, well, I don't remember it well enough, I guess, but I felt bad for her that she was being gaslit.
It was like, what, an hour ago at most? Like, how could Mora already forget that? I mean, I don't, that's wild to me. That was a big conversation. Like, she had a big reaction to it. She clearly heard it. It's not like she was not paying attention or, like, kind of barely reacted where you could say, oh, maybe she didn't quite understand what was being said in that moment. Like, she clearly heard that.
And so that was wild to me. Showed us it too. They showed us her reaction.
Right, right, exactly. And I think the only reason why Candace would pretend to not have said that I can think of would be if she wants to paint Portia as a liar and thus suspicious to be a traitor. But Candace and Portia, I think, came into this on very good terms. They have a history. Yeah. You would think that Portia would be somebody who she would want around. And I mean, look, Portia's a lot of things. A strong traitor hunter, not one of those things that I see as being in her personality necessarily. So I would think that Portia would be somebody who Candace wants to keep around as long as humanly possible. And so to really place this spotlight on Portia just felt like a big mistake to me.
Yeah, I agree. Because she kind of just burned her one of her own.
Yeah, exactly. And that makes Portia, you would think, very suspicious of Candace. So then at that point, it's like, okay, yeah, maybe you need to get rid of Portia. but you didn't need to put Portia in this situation. She did enough by herself, which we were just about to get into. But this didn't feel like it needed to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I was shocked when it did. I want to hear if maybe like there's an explanation from Candace on why she did that or what, yeah. Because for right now, it doesn't really make sense to me either.
Yeah, I'd be interested. And, you know, who knows how long Candace is going to make it. By the time she gets out, this might be very old news that won't get asked about. But I would be curious to hear her thoughts on what exactly happened, whether she intentionally lied, whether she maybe also, like Maura, forgot somehow or thought maybe misspoke. I don't know. I can't imagine, but I'd be interested to hear her thoughts on it.
Yeah.
But then the traitors are back in the turret and they get their shortlist from the secret traitor. The names on it are Rob Roush, Ian, Mark, and Eric. So in this moment, did this give you any sort of clue as to who the secret traitor could be?
At this moment, not really. Like, I was like, it could really be just a ton of people, especially because of the list of people who were chosen, or like they were only a handful of people to choose from in terms of to put in as an option. So I think that at this point, like, it made it clear it obviously wasn't any of those people, but I didn't have like a clear set on who it could be.
Yeah. My only thought was that because it was four guys, I thought maybe it was a female secret traitor. But then I also really thought in my mind before that, I was thinking that it was a male because it was already two women in the turret and one man. So I thought they would try to potentially even out the numbers that way. But then when it was four guys, I was like, usually I feel like if it was a male secret traitor, they would not necessarily want to only give male options. I don't know. Maybe this cast is more mature, but I feel like in other shows that a lot of times there's kind of loose gender lines in the early days, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Well, then that is where episode one ends. So then let's get into episode two. We start with breakfast as always. Not as always, I guess. Sometimes we don't start with breakfast, but we do here. And it is revealed that Ian Terry from Big Brother was the first to be murdered. I was very sad about this. I love Ian, and I was very excited to get to see Ian in a different environment because he's not somebody that's done other shows than Big Brother. This is the first non-Big Brother show we've seen him on, and at least to my knowledge. So I was really excited to get to see and interested to see how he was going to do here. And it really sucked to not only get so little of him, but like he was pretty invisible for the time he was there. Like we really got very little Ian. So that was very disappointing to me.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we did hear in the little whispering how Colton was saying how he was really smart. So maybe that was a little foreshadowing and that we were going to see him go pretty early on, which even you last week in our draft, you also said that maybe he was going to be kind of reserved and quiet. That could not be the best for him. So I think just altogether, sad to see him go, but I think it makes sense on why the traitors did choose him.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense. Look, they are choosing, it seems like they are really prioritizing getting rid of the smart players who are going to be the most likely to figure them out. And I can't blame them for that. Like, I think that is a good strategy. So
self-preservation.
Yeah. So I think that Ian seemed to take it well. He seemed to have, even in his short time here, a positive experience that Big Brother 22, he did not have a positive experience. And so I think that this was good to make him maybe a little bit more open to doing other future shows. And so I hope that this isn't the last we see of him. We see Tiffany Mitchell make a little speech towards him as well. And the problem with Tiffany's speech, though, is that certain people got suspicious. And Colton in particular says that he is suspicious of Tiffany, that having that moment, that unnecessary, like putting yourself in the position to be the one to give that speech, I think can sometimes be a little bit of a mistake because it feels like you're trying too hard to come across as so sad that he's murdered.
Yeah, I agree. It did seem like maybe don't speak up right now in this moment, but it was nice of what you said about him.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're from the same show. I don't know how much of a relationship they had outside of this before, but I'm sure they had met. And so, yeah, of course, Tiffany's going to be sad about it. So I don't think that it felt suspicious on its own, but I understand the thought of whoever it is that does that speech, whatever the speech is. Some people with so little to go off of, something like that maybe isn't the smartest thing to just kind of put yourself out there.
Yeah, I mean, and this is more of a clue, I guess you could say, than just someone's breathing, you know, like what we've heard in last season. So at least there's that. Colton's using some more clues to reference versus just actions.
Yeah, for sure. This felt like a cast that was a little bit more savvy, I think, overall than maybe the ones that we've seen in the past, just because now there's so many more seasons to watch, whether it's the three U.S., the international versions. If you are somebody who has the time, you know, to know that you're going on this show, you should watch as much as possible. And I do actually feel like it seemed like a good portion of this cast did the homework and wasn't just going off of "you breathed weird," "you looked at me a little funny right after the masks went off." Like the things we've seen in the past, it felt like people were going off of some things that were a little bit more tangible.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, speaking of reasons to murder somebody that are a little more tangible, let's talk about Portia for a second. So Portia accidentally slips up multiple times while talking on this day. And the first time she says, referencing Ian, "and he's the one I killed." I can't defend that.
No.
I don't understand how that just accidentally comes out. The rest of these, I think I can defend a little bit more, but that one to me, I don't understand why she said it like that.
Yeah, agreed. Like it totally was a slip up, but it just also was like, why were you saying I in that situation?
Right. Like she says, I know in like some of her exit press that she's done where she was talking as if she was a traitor. So she was saying like, "Well, I would do this, and then I would do that," and trying to put herself in that mindset. But honestly, I watched it back, and it doesn't feel like this is hypothetical that she's talking. It really doesn't seem like that is what she was doing in that moment. It just seems like she totally slipped up, and I don't understand how that happens. But it did. The other two instances that we see are where she says, "if we kill a faithful." That to me feels like more we as a collective, like he was killed. Like we killed a faithful and then we murder a faithful, like, and then we banish a faithful. I can see that one a little bit more, but that is the second instance that specifically Ron Funches like kind of makes his antenna stick up.
Yeah, I agree. I was like, well, I think I would also use the tense we, like, you know, I was just like, well, like in a general setting like that, you would think of yourself in the faithfuls because she is a faithful. She can say we faithfuls, like we don't want to kill another one of us kind of thing. And so for that situation, that one is more excusable for me as well.
Right. Because you could tell the context of it being like, okay, every day there's two, like there's a murder and a banishment. If both of them are faithfuls, like that's kind of what she was trying to say is that, okay, two faithfuls go home today and then whatever, whatever, whatever. So like, I knew that's what she was going for with that one. The third instance is where she says there's four traitors. That one I can understand. I don't think that she should have said it so definitively. I think that's the problem. She should have said, I assume there's four traitors. Because there's the one that they picked outside and then the three that she assumes Alan selected at the round table. So I understand that, but she's talking so definitively that it feels suspicious.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. This one, I was like, why did you say this one also? But it does seem a little bit fishy because you don't fully know how many traitors there are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Ron really specifically notices these moments that we see. Also, he's with Donna and Michael, and the three of them seem very suspicious of Portia after this and start to talk about all the moments that she's had slipping up over the last day or so. And they then decide that they want to bring that up at the round table. And we will see how that goes in just a minute here.
Yes. I know that was interesting.
Yeah. Well, then we get to the mission, and the players have to transport three thrones back to the castle. Along the way, they'll have various stops where they have a chance to collect bags of gold. Whoever is sitting on the throne at the end when they get back to the castle is shielded from murder tonight. So there are these shield tokens that they have wherever all the other tokens are. And if they get a shield token, they can switch places with whoever on the throne. So all that matters is who is on there when you get back to the castle. This caused some drama, specifically with Michael Rapaport, who really wanted to be sitting on that throne and was very upset that they didn't get the opportunity to be on it at the end.
Yeah, I know. I feel like every time we're just going to hear more complaining from him. So I feel like the traitors will get him out at some point just because of how he's being annoying. But as of now, he's a good shield to them in terms of that he's just so annoying that people also could banish him in that way. So I don't know. But yeah, for this, it's so early on. Like, why are you making it such a scene?
I mean, in a lot of ways, I think he's the Tom Sandoval of the season. The one who we're like, I think they're all so annoyed by, and we're like, oh, just get him out already. But I think he's worse than Sandoval on this show, which is
way worse.
Hard for me to say, but it's a high bar. But he surpasses it. And it's not even fun. Like, I think he just kind of sucks the fun out of a lot of the scenes that he's in, which is a lot of them, because he makes every moment that he's in about him. And it's so frustrating to watch. And he's just like, I think there's fun villains. I'm trying to think of like somebody on a previous Traitor season who was kind of like a fun villain, and honestly I can't really think of any, because it was Sandoval last season. I don't know that I would consider him to be a fun villain either, for the most part. But he was more fun to me than Michael. Like, I think Sandoval, it was more things outside of the show that made him like not a fun villain to me. But on the show, if that was my only exposure to him, I would have considered him a fun villain, I think. Whereas Michael, there's reasons outside and inside the castle that to me he's not fun.
Agreed. I just want to see less of him.
And hopefully he will be gone soon enough that we will not have to see much more of him, but we will see soon. But Colden, Jam Jam, and Caroline end up winning the shields here. So Michael is particularly upset with Jam Jam, and that starts a whole feud that we will be seeing carrying on throughout the rest of this episode and episode 3 as well.
Yeah, I know. That's what really annoyed me about the situation, because I didn't want him to be attacking Jam Jam like he was, because obviously we know he wasn't a main traitor. I mean, like, maybe at this point I was like, okay, well, he could be the secret traitor, but I didn't really think so. So I don't know. I was feeling bad for Jam Jam for having to be the brunt of that.
Yeah, Jam Jam, I mean, we'll get into this, but like, there are certain moments that definitely would have made me suspicious of him if I was in there, and that I don't fully understand why he moved in certain ways here. But I would have probably been suspicious of Jam Jam. But yeah, I mean, I love Jam Jam, so I don't want Michael to be attacking him. But I do understand why some people were suspicious of Jam Jam.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, then we get to the round table, and Natalie kicks things off by calling out Donna. That doesn't really last very long here, though, because Ron quickly shifts the focus onto Portia. He pulls out all of his evidence, which I thought was great. I thought Ron actually did a really good job at giving concrete examples, like those three examples that we talked about. So I thought that Ron did a really good job laying out his case against Portia.
I agree. I mean, I thought if anyone were to give a case, like, that was the best case to do it. Like, you know, like what he came with the facts and proof of what he believed to show traitor qualities, which, to be fair for him to say what he did, is accurate, like to think the way he was thinking, even though on our side, we obviously knew she wasn't, but it did make sense. And he came with some valid points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that some people may have thought, oh, it's Portia, the secret traitor, because of all these moments, but I knew she wasn't the secret traitor. Like, why would you choose? You have Candace and Rinna already in the turret. You're going to make Portia the secret traitor and have three of the four be housewives? That would be bonkers. But I know there were some people watching it who thought that maybe Portia was the secret traitor, but I knew there was no way that that was possible.
Yeah, I agree. It didn't seem that way. It seems that she just was not remembering what she was saying or not thinking straight in terms of what she was saying.
Yeah. So Candace defends Portia here, which again is interesting to me because you put her in a lot of hot water and I don't fully understand. Clearly you don't want her to go home and be banished because you're defending her here. So this was crazy to me, but I mean, I was glad to see it, but it was a little bit wild after Candace just totally threw her under the bus hours ago.
After this, I was really like, oh, maybe people are going to suspect Candace now, but it doesn't seem like people were really mentioning her. So
yeah,
I was surprised by that.
Well, then Michael, of course, brings up the shields at the challenge. And while he's doing so, has a very similar slip up to Portia where he says, we killed Ian last night. And then everybody kind of turns their heads and like, Michael, why did you say we? And yeah, just all these people having these slip-ups. It's interesting. I mean, I understand it. Like, you're nervous, especially at a round table. I think that having that type of slip-up. I mean, last season, speaking of Sandoval, we saw where he said women are more likely to cheat instead of... I don't even remember what he was trying to say. Or be cheaters instead. He meant to say traitors. Mm-hmm. And everybody looked at him a little funny because of that. But yeah, I mean, it was kind of ironic to see Michael make that similar slip up after being part of the charge against Portia for doing the same thing.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And at this point, though, and it kind of, I guess, in a way, more so shows that what Portia's saying isn't really show if she was a traitor or not, because there's more than one person saying that, and not like the traitors wouldn't mess up that badly, you would think, in saying we both times. So I'm surprised the faithful still were really harping on that we statement.
Yeah, I mean, we also saw in a much more similar situation, we saw Peppermint in season two, if you remember, that she was banished because she said something very similar to that. The vote ends up being 10-8-4 with Portia being banished. Very close vote that Donna received 8 votes. And that was surprising to me because we didn't talk about Donna a ton at this round table. And then she ends up getting 8 votes.
I know. I was really shocked. I was getting nervous for Donna that I was like, whoa, like, is she the one being banished tonight? But ended up being Portia. So I feel like based on the conversations we were seeing, it kind of seemed that that was going in that direction anyways. But then the vote count, I was so shocked by that. And I was then scared for Donna. I was like, oh no, like, she going to be the next one out? Because usually like whoever is talked about roundtable is going to continue being talked about. So that made me nervous for her.
Yeah, God, how differently the next episode and a half would have gone if Donna was banished here.
Yeah, I know.
I just can't even think about it because, yeah, I mean, I don't want to, you know, we'll get to everything, but everything would have been totally different because there would be no shortlist.
Yeah.
So, dang.
Crazy.
Well, the traitors, after this banishment, Portia reveals to everyone she's a faithful, of course, and then she leaves. Then the traitors go back into the turret and they discover, oh no, sorry, they get a letter in the confessional and they discover that they have to do a murder in plain sight tonight. So there are tarot cards hidden behind a portrait in the kitchen. These cards represent the player who are shortlisted for murder, and they have to burn the card of the player they choose to murder in the breakfast room. When I heard this, I was like, are they just gonna not, like, they're gonna be, no, I'm not doing that. That would be me. I'd be like, no, thank you. I'll skip a murder tonight if I have to.
I know. I feel like Rob was the most on board. He was like, yeah, let's do it. This is a fun game. Like, this would be cool. And then getting the housewives like on board too. It was fun. I mean, obviously they were gonna be on board. I feel like they had to, like they signed up to do the show. But yeah, it would be interesting if they chose to say like, okay, I'm not doing that.
Rob's having a lot more fun than I expected him to. And I think that I think when I said this last week when we talked about this, that I couldn't see Rob as a traitor because I just don't think he cares enough to be a traitor. But he's having a lot of fun. I think that if he was a faithful, he would probably be a lot more miserable, kind of like Kate Chastain vibes. Mm-hmm. But because he's a traitor, I think he's just like, he loves this. I think that he just kind of, he loves these games and the sneakiness. And this is so much more his speed than Love Island.
Oh, for sure. And he seems very much like really invested in it, which is fun to see. Mm-hmm. He's surprising me as a traitor.
Me too. Well, if they successfully complete this task, they will meet the secret traitor. If not, they will have no control over who is murdered. The secret traitor will have all the power, and they will not meet them either. So there is big stakes here, because they are relying on, if not, on the secret traitor to murder somebody who they're okay with murdering, but the secret traitor doesn't even know who the other traitors are, so they have no way of doing it in a way that would be some, knowing that they're doing somebody who the other traitors would be okay with. So pretty big stakes if they decide not to do this or are just unsuccessful in doing it.
Yeah, it kind of made it seem that they had to be successful based on what those stakes were, because that big of a shift would be a big thing for them. So I had a feeling that they would do anything they could to get this done.
Yeah. Well, they certainly do. And in an effort to distract everybody so that Rob can go and get the tarot cards, Candace decides to start a conga line. And this was so funny to me because like it felt, just based on the editing, like it was so out of left field. I feel like maybe just in the moment, she probably, like, they were talking for a long time. It was probably, like, not just, like, out of nowhere like this.
Yeah, it did seem very, like, all right, now conga long time. yeah. But, yeah, I don't know, because we're not there, obviously.
Yeah. But one person did find it suspicious. Our good friend, Rob C. I loved seeing this, because this is the difference between somebody who maybe has seen one or two seasons of The Traitors just like in the last month or so since they got the call to do it, just so that they'll know what they're getting into, versus somebody who has week by week recapped every episode with Puya, delved deep into it, watched all the international versions, just knows these games so well that he was able to clock this immediately, that there was a murder in plain sight happening. And so he goes and hides to avoid having to join this. He warns Tiffany that I think there's a murder in plain sight happening. Don't do anything that might be suspicious. And the problem is that he also tells Candace. I was screaming at my TV. I was like, no, don't do this. Because I think that it seemed like he is closer to Candace than we have seen. Because, and not just from the show, but Candace also is somebody who's like, she's commented on all Rob's social media, like he comments on her stuff. It feels like they have a good relationship. And so I expected watching this that we were going to see them have a good relationship. And we do see them talk every now and again. Like I did clock that they do have multiple conversations. But I think that they must have been pretty close allies because he felt comfortable enough saying to Candace, I think there's a murder in plain sight happening.
Oh, yeah. I know. I was also like screaming at the TV thinking, oh, gosh, this is going to seal his fate here, which is sad. But because he's just too smart. But yeah, I am surprised that he went to Candace like out of everyone. I mean, I guess because you were saying like they had a relationship, but at least he told Tiffany like, leave it at that. Like, don't tell anyone else, maybe. That could have helped him a little bit there. But, I mean, it didn't really change anything because Candace wasn't the one even saying who they were murdering. So in that moment, I was like, okay, well, maybe they will choose someone else because she's not there to choose. But she would have influenced, like, maybe the future turrets there. So it was interesting to see that.
If I'm right, and Candace and Roth have a very close relationship, I think that getting rid of Rob here actually was not good for Candace's game, because Rob, there is potential. Like, if I'm Candace, if I'm in Candace's mind right now, and I have a really close relationship with Rob, and Rob is starting to clock the fact that I started the conga line, he thinks there's a murder in plain sight happening, he might be starting to think that I'm a traitor. But if Rob is very close to me, and Rob is very smart, Rob knows this game, maybe this is actually a good thing for me. Because then, if he wants me around as a traitor, because I can be his traitor angel, I can keep him safe because we're close. And if he is on to me, then if other people start to clock me, maybe he can get them off the scent because he doesn't want me to go anywhere. So maybe it's a little 4D chess, but I do think that there is upside for Rob, for Candace having Rob there, who might have some suspicion starting that I'm a traitor.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Because she could have swayed it in a different direction in that way, but it didn't seem that that was happening there for her, especially. She just thought of him as a big threat and thought it would hurt her, but there is that way that it could have helped her in return.
Which, look, she could be totally right. And if Rob, maybe they're not that close and he would have wanted to have his moment as a good faithful in kind of leading the troops in a way to get Candace out. And absolutely, that could have still happened. And it was a great move. But either way, Candace didn't have a whole lot of say in it because it was Lisa and Rob R who really were the ones at the chess table. And so Rob successfully finds the shortlist. And on those names that are on it are Monet, Rob C, Tara, and Kristen. So then, like I said, he goes to play chess with Rinna so that they can discuss. And I thought this was very smart. Great way to get the two of them to be able to talk. And it's too boring that other people don't really want to just watch them play chess. So they have a little space to themselves for the most part. And they were able to make each of the shortlist players a piece of the chessboard. And they were able to kind of a little secretly have this conversation. And I thought this was a very smart way to do all of this.
I agree. I thought it was fun. And then we even saw them being watched by Tara at some point. So that made it also kind of like, okay, like they need to really put on their acting skills here and try to ignore the fact that she's like eagle eyes on them. But then she ended up leaving and they could talk more about the actual names. But she was trying to teach her chess, which was actually kind of, it was funny that it worked also that they were showing, like he was almost going to say the name and then he's like, or what do you do next? And she was asking like what move and stuff like that. Like it made sense. Like you could understand like the metaphors of what was going on.
Yeah. Look, Rinna's an actress. So she knows how to play a part and be, you know, she's good at what she does. And I think that they both played this really well. And Rob is able to successfully burn a card. We don't, at the end of this episode, know who that is. But we do know that they are successful in their mission. So they are going to get a murder and they are going to meet the secret traitor. So going into episode 3 now, we start at breakfast. And it is revealed that Rob C has been murdered. I was watching this episode along with Chappelle, who was live streaming on Twitch. And in this moment, it was just, you could tell everyone in the chat, everyone, it was just so heartbroken by this. And I mean, I'll just say, I very, very sad. But Rob got such a good edit here on this time that he was there. He could have gotten completely purpled, completely invisible, no edit, just, you know, some random person was murdered, and those who didn't already know him coming into it would have gotten very little content to get to know him at all. But he got a great edit. He was seen as very smart, very likable, and was on to things, caught a murder in plain sight happening, which is crazy. And so I think even for the short time that he was there, that he got a lot more content than most people do who are out this early. So I am just so happy that we got what we did from him. And I love that now some of my friends who are Traitors watchers, but aren't, you know, aware of the RHAP universe or Rob are have some familiarity with him now. And I, yeah, it's just all very, very cool to have seen him for the time that we did.
Yes, totally agree. I feel like because he left early, like it's sad, of course, but obviously too, the fact that his edit was good kind of lets it be a little bit more sweet of a goodbye of being like, okay, like he had his time and he was just too smart to be there.
Yes, yes. It's a good, if you have to go out, it's a good reason to go out. And it's a backhanded compliment, as Ian Terry said. So afterwards, Michael and Jam Jam, get into another argument here at the breakfast table when Michael once again brings up the shields and accuses Jam Jam of being a traitor. It's just like, let it go. Let it go. You've said your piece.
And it just not necessary.
Yeah. just listen to Elsa. But then Alan comes in and reveals that the players will be facing another round table before their next mission. So before the round table, Tiffany and Michael meet in the library, and she tells him that she actually agrees with him about Jam Jam, but that he needs to chill out a bit because people are getting very suspicious of him because he's being so vocal. So he agrees to chill out a little bit, and she the traitors are worried about accidentally banishing the secret traitor, which is an interesting little ripple in this. That's why what I love about the secret traitor twist is that it does give the traitors something to worry about. They don't have all of the information. Nobody has all of the information this season. So that part of it, I really do like, because I think a lot of times people say being a traitor is a little bit OP, a little bit too easy to get by because you only have to worry about the banishments and not the murders. And you can, there's nothing that you really have to figure out or worry about too much other than just acting normal. So I like that this adds a little wrinkle. And I think conversations like this are a testament to that.
Yeah, oh, I agree. I feel like, obviously, on our side of it, we want Michael to chill out, too. So, I think, but for that part of it. But then I think also then going into the secret traitors of it all, like, it does make sense that, like, obviously the traitors don't want to get rid of their own. So, I don't know. I wish there was an ability there for them to allow them to know who they are before the turret, maybe.
Yeah. So before the roundtable, the Faithfuls are primarily floating the names of Donna, Michael, and Ron as potential traitors. And Ron is a new name that's floating out that wasn't last episode, primarily because he was the one who was really leading the charge against Portia, and he was wrong about it. And I get that. I don't know that it would make me necessarily think that Ron is a traitor. It would just seem like, okay, you were a Faithful who was wrong.
Yeah.
And there was legitimate evidence against Portia. So it wasn't like, I would get it if Ron was like let's say he was just saying, oh, I can just tell that Portia's a traitor. Like, I just know it. And it didn't give any sort of like hard evidence, but everybody just kind of trusted him for some reason. And then he was wrong. But he laid out his case. Like, he said, these are the things she said that make me think that. And you all agreed with it. So I don't know. I don't fully understand why Ron is so being looked at so heavily now.
Yeah, I agree. Because then it kind of scares other people to think like, oh, they can't come forward with a name because then they're going to be seen as a traitor. So it's not beneficial for them either in that way of targeting him like that.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, you know, we see at the roundtable that Candace is really the one to kick things off by putting the focus on Ron. And clearly Candace has a motive to do that as a traitor. So that I understand. And it could just be the traitors kind of putting things in the ears of the Faithfuls because they want to put the focus on him and keep it off of themselves. So that I get, but yeah, I think just for the Faithfuls who are really looking heavily at Ron here, I think that I don't know that that's something that we see quite often of whoever was leading the charge against someone who ends up being a Faithful then ends up getting looked at themselves. So it's like, you know, this isn't the first time it's happened by any means, but usually it's wrong. So I feel like this is maybe a tactic that we should leave behind in the future.
Yes, agreed. But then it's so hard to tell. So then, like, what's the real tactics ever? So you never
exactly,
know.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the problem with the traitors is that actually Rob Cesternino told this to me one time before he went to film that in a way the traitors is a game for babies. That it's kind of like just point at a random person and you can probably come up with something that's suspicious about them. And there's really not a lot of right and wrong ways to go about it. So maybe there's some truth to that.
Yeah, it's like throwing a dart blindfolded almost. Like you exactly. never know.
Exactly. Well, then after Candace really puts the focus on Ron, she says that he flipped the script at the last round table. Colton then switches gears onto Donna. And Donna, it gets talked about a lot here. So Tiffany asks Donna who she suspects is a traitor. Because one of the things that people are suspicious about her is that she's not naming any names. People are asking her direct questions and she just kind of shrugs, doesn't really answer. And that's suspicious. That's the Dan Giesling effect. Like, that's exactly what he did, where he just was so reluctant to say a name until the last minute when he accused Phaedra. And Donna's kind of doing a little bit of a similar thing here where she's not really answering, but she does at this moment and she says Michael. And that's an easy name to put out there. I don't blame her for doing that, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. I would have said Michael too.
Yeah. Not but you. Then Michael, of course, puts the focus back on Jam Jam. It's like, okay, buddy, we get it. We get it. I don't think many other people are super suspicious of Jam Jam, although he's also done, like, Rob was suspicious of Jam Jam too, because at that breakfast the morning before when he was still there, Jam Jam was like, I was convinced that you were getting murdered. It's just kind of a little bit weird. So I do get it, but it doesn't feel like most people, like, he doesn't get any votes here.
Yeah, no, it's
actually Michael's vote, but yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't, it's just more of the emptiness of like, okay, this needs to just continue being out there, but it's not getting any traction.
Yeah. And the vote here is actually nearly unanimous. Donna gets almost every vote. And so then she does reveal herself to be the secret traitor. Everybody cheers. It's the earliest U.S. has ever had a traitor voted out. So this was a big accomplishment by the faithfuls.
Yeah, I know. I was shocked to hear her say she was a secret traitor because I wasn't really suspecting her. Well, I guess it could have been her knowing that it obviously wasn't people who were on the list. So she was one of the options. But I thought the way that she was playing it, like, she didn't really seem like the secret traitor to me. Or also maybe we just didn't get enough of her in the edit to really tell. So I was sad to see her go this early on as well, but it is exciting that they caught a traitor.
Yeah, she was on my radar as this potentially being the secret traitor, but I wasn't convinced of it. I thought Jam Jam was a high on my list because we were getting like Rob suspecting him. Of course, we were getting the whole him versus Michael, and I didn't think it was going to be Michael. So I thought Jam Jam was kind of one of the other ones that was on people's radars a bit and was acting in a bit of a weird way too, just from what I was looking at, that I thought, like, there's definitely a possibility here that he would also, like, he was a gamer. There's no gamers in the turret right now. I thought that that would kind of fit a lot of categories of somebody who I was looking at. But Donna was also someone who just was acting a little bit too suspicious and was somebody also who I thought she was for sure going to be a traitor, and then she wasn't. And the traitors producers love making an older lady a traitor. So when she announced herself to be it, it was not shocking, but I was also not convinced enough to where, like, I wasn't at all, like, it was so obvious to me.
Yeah, no, I see that. I think that she, for her time there, she was doing the best she could, but it seemed like she couldn't really backstab people or, like, want to lie as much as maybe you have to be in the traitors. So I think that it was definitely a fun time for her, but I think that she's better off just being friends with them versus playing a game with them.
Yeah, and she says that she was starstruck. I wonder, I don't know how much of these shows that she actually watches to where she would be starstruck by, like, Survivor and Big Brother players. I wonder, I'd be curious to hear, and I don't think she did any exit press, but I'd be curious if she did to hear, like, what her background is with these shows. But very cool to see her in here, and it was fun. It seemed like she had a lot of fun, too. So I think, you know, it was a short-lived run, but I had a lot of fun watching her.
Same.
Well, then after Donna leaves, Alan tells everyone to pair up with someone who they trust with their life for the next mission. So we get everybody pairing up at the mission, except for one person, because we have an odd number. So Ron ends up being alone here. But the other pairs, just to kind of quickly run through them, are Candace and Tara, Dorinda and Lisa, Michael and Tiffany, Natalie and Monet, Caroline and Colton, Mark and Kristen, Eric and Johnny, Maura and Rob, and Jam Jam and Steven. So then, like I said, Ron ends up being by himself, which ends up being a pretty big deal, because the mission is that every one member of each pair is locked inside a cage, and their partner must find and stack 10 skulls on their podium within 10 minutes. If they are successful, they are both safe for murder, but everyone left in their cage after time runs out is eligible for murder. So what that means is that Ron doesn't have a chance to survive. He is just eligible for murder tonight. So with as few people as there were that ended up here, that was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I know. I felt bad for him that he didn't even know if that would be the situation here. But yeah, I was hoping that it would maybe be the other way, that he would just automatically be safe. But I think it makes sense because they needed to make sure there would be enough people, I guess, to choose from in terms of who could get murdered. So, yeah.
That would have been a fun twist, though, that if it ended up being a good thing. That's something I could see them doing. That's something a Survivor does sometimes and Big Brother does, like where they give the person immunity who ends up being alone. So I would have actually really liked that.
Yeah, me too.
Then the ones who end up being left in their cages here and thus up for murder are Eric, Kristen, Caroline, Lisa, and Ron. Obviously, Lisa is a traitor, so we know she's not eligible for murder. But one of the other four will be murdered face-to-face tonight, which is very fun. And who are you thinking at this point is the most likely to be murdered here?
This one's hard. I maybe think it could be Eric or Caroline. I don't think it's going to be Ron because people are still like a little bit suspicious of him. And Kristen, I feel like we haven't seen a ton of yet. Like I'd want to see her more in this season. So I really don't want her to go. But with Caroline, I think like it would make sense if she went or Eric for me. But I don't know. Who do you think?
I'm thinking it's between Caroline and Kristen because I think they want to go in the Bravo housewife direction to throw them off the scent because they've already murdered two gamers, that it's getting a little bit too obvious if we get a third non-Bravo person. And Kristen is a Bravo. So I think that Kristen would be a good choice for them because she is Bravo, but she's not a housewife. And so I think she kind of like is peripherally in that group, but not so much to where you're actually like getting rid of one of your potentially closest allies. And Caroline, though, would be a more direct, like, we are murdering a housewife, and maybe getting rid of one of those people is a good choice for them at this point to throw off the scent. But Kristen, I think maybe they think of as being somebody who's a little bit more astute and likely to figure them out. So I think there's pros and cons both ways, but I do think it'll be one of those two.
Yeah, I can see that. I just didn't want to say Kristen because I didn't want to speak that into the existence of what could, I mean, it's obviously already happened, but for what could happen.
Yeah, I like Kristen. I think that Kristen, we haven't seen too much of her yet, but I do think that she is very smart, and she, I feel like if she gets further in the game, I could definitely see her as being somebody who has some good reads. So I think they might be smart to get rid of her right now.
Yeah.
But Colton starts to suspect Tiffany of being a traitor. And I feel like this might be something that we see more in the next episode or two come to fruition. I can see Tiffany's name starting to get brought up a little bit more. And especially, like, she's kind of been associating herself with Michael quite a bit. And I could see that becoming a problem for her. So I'm curious to see with the next two episodes we're going to get later this week, how that plays out.
Yeah, I agree. It does seem like they're kind of foreshadowing that as a problem for her being so close to Michael and might not be her best move.
Yeah, because he's thinking like that she intentionally killed two gamers to throw everyone off the scent. I think that's a, I don't know that that's like a good theory, because I feel like doing one, yes. I think that probably the smartest thing, like if you are in a turret where you have a majority of either gamers or housewives, I think it's good for the first murder to be somebody who is like completely random, completely throw off the scent, like one of those non-gamers, non-housewives. And then the second one, you make somebody from your own group, because then that's like, okay, now we have a little bit of a clue and it's pointing in a direction. And then you don't do another one, at least for a few weeks, from your own group. Like then you get a gamer, then you get another random person, then you get like, you kind of keep your numbers that you have at that point intact, but you've already done enough to kind of make people not super suspicious of your group.
Yeah, I know. I think people reading into like the people who are getting murdered, like, doesn't always ring true, because you don't know what's going through their minds of who they're getting rid of and everything like that. But it is something to use as like a fact, as a point, or like a theory of something, because you don't really have too much to grasp onto. So if that's the only thing, I guess it works in some cases, but just not this season.
Yeah. Well, that is pretty much where we leave off, because then we get a cliffhanger where the traitors go back to the forest and the faithfuls who are in the cages give a final plea. And we see Ron being very angry, very like, you better get me tonight. I'm like, whoa, Ron Funches. I did not know you had that in you. But I thought that was very funny. And I'm curious to see where we go from here. We get two episodes on this next Thursday. And then after that, it'll be one episode a week. But we're going to have a lot more to talk about next week. So I'm excited to get two more episodes pretty soon here.
Yes, me too. And I'm so excited to see the rest of the season. I feel like this initial drop, of course, we were sad to see certain people go, but it is a great start to the season so far, I'd say. And seeing the cast all together, like, it's fun cast, I think, as a whole, and continuing to see the wrongs and the rights that are going on. It's going to be fun throughout the season.
Yes, it will. Well, thank you all so much for listening. We will be back next week to cover more traders. So be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on social media at Let's Chat Reality. So we will chat with you guys more next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye.